Change ton mot de passe que je vois tes messages. Vas-tu finir par changer d'idée, maudit de bokeh? Change d'air quand tu me parles. Tu vas changer de job. Faut que tu changes d'amis. Je te conseille de changer de ton. Ben, c'est pas à elle de changer. C'est à toi. La violence faite aux femmes, ça s'arrête maintenant. Sensibilisons, intervenons et appelons SOS Violence Conjugale. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome to Amandla here on CKUT 90.3 FM, your one-hour African current affairs show. I'm here virtually with Doug, and last week we really did a whole focus on the Soweto uprising. If you have not heard the show, please check out our blog at www.amandla.ca. It was an amazing reflection on an incredibly important period in South African and, in fact, global history. So fast forward a week, here we are. What we were not able to do then was play all of the amazing music that either came out of the uprising or accompanied the uprising or is evocative of the uprising. But also in that week, we lost a giant in Africa. We lost Kenneth Kaunda, who was the first independence leader of Zambia, neighboring South Africa. Controversial figure, but impactful. So we're going to talk a lot about him as well today, Doug.
And along with him, and coincidental with his death at 97 years old this past week, was the death of a Canadian academic who had a very big impact on Africa and Canadian relationships with Africa. His name was Professor Douglas George Anglin, taught at professor at Concordia, Carleton University in Ottawa, and a founding member of the Canadian the Institute of African Studies. So we'll include him because he was the first vice chancellor of University of Zambia in 1964, and Kenneth Kaunda appointed him, and they were big friends.
Amazing.
Stay tuned.
Thank you.
When I was setting up the Soweto piece with Dan O'Mara, I asked him if he had any pieces of music that he thought would be appropriate for the time and the period and the protests going on. And his first reaction was to say, first, Mannenberg. It's a beautiful song by Abdul Ibrahim Dollar Brand. That was his first name before he returned to his Islamic or Muslim origins. And what was Dan's thing? It set the backdrop for the whole period. Everybody listened to that music. It was liberating. It was danceable. We all, without words, knew what we had to do. And the second piece he asked for was Gil Scott-Heron's song, Soweto. So you're going to hear, you're right now in the middle of Mannenberg. You're going to hear the Gil Scott-Heron piece after. And then I've got two other pieces I've added. One is Toi Toi that appears in the Serafina movie, the final pro, and this song is known as the final protest, but the Serafina movie. And the other is Siele Mama, Siele La Mama. And that is Hide Mama, they're coming to get you. So that's what you're listening to now on Amandla CQT 90.3.
Thank you. Luna! Kilama!
Hamar
Farfa! Kilama! Hamar Farfa! Yamma!
You have 60 seconds to clear the area! Let's go home now!
Johannesburg, Detroit, like Johannesburg, Philadelphia.
Ladies and gentlemen, dear friends of Amandla, we're here this evening to commemorate Kenneth Kaunda. The music you've just heard is him actually leading a choir singing Tiendi Pamodzi. Tiendi Pamodzi means we will march together, we'll walk together, we'll move forward together. Mditima Umo, meaning with one heart, with a united people. And that was the theme song of Kenneth Kaunda. Wherever he went, and he had a great voice, and he sang loud and often at rallies, and he passed away just last week at 97 years of age. It's sad, but we are here tonight with David Beer, who was actually present in Zambia in October 1964 at independence, when Kenneth Kaunda became, I believe at that point, the prime minister of...
No, president.
He became president, okay, yeah. of Zambia. And David, what took you to Zambia and how was KK a part of that?
Well, I had signed up with CUSO, which then was the Canadian University Service Overseas, to go to Northern Rhodesia, soon to become Zambia, to work with the Zambia Youth Service, which was a new organization for mainly rural young men and potential leaders who had experienced a lot of the liberation struggle with Kenneth Kaunda's party United National Independence Party, and they had missed out on school, of course, and some of them were jailed. So the ZYS was set up by an old colleague and friend, Guy Arnold, who set up the Canadian Voluntary Commonwealth Service, CVCS, a precursor of CUSO in the mid-1960s. So I had gone to Jamaica. This story is going backwards. And I worked there with the Jamaica Youth Corps, which was similar to the Zambia Youth Service in concept, with rural young men being taught skills and civics and being members of a new society. So that's how I went from Jamaica to Zambia, which of course is not quite Zambia. And Kaunda was a hero to me as the young Jamaican national leaders were as well. Just to remind ourselves, Kenneth Kaunda became president. He was the chief minister of the colony of Northern Rhodesia for about a year before his party had won the election, which was a precursor to being independence. So the Jamaica Youth Corps was a good label for me. I was experienced in working with youth from Canada. And KK was a particular interest because he was young. He was 39 years old when he became president of a devastated piece of British colonial property that had the mines, and all the riches went straight over the heads of the majority people. And it had the agricultural lands that was owned by the Rhodesian whites. So there was only 100 graduates at independence, October 24th, 1964, 100. And they had to build a nation on the backs of that and the hardworking peasantry. So KK was a hero for me. And I was young, and to have the opportunity to participate in a new Zambian organization. It wasn't the secondary schools where they had to do the English matrix and all that jazz. And so we had a sense of excitement in building a new organization.
And he had also started developing what he called Zambian humanism as well. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I think in my recollection of that period, that had not been formed as an ism, if I can say that. But he's in his political line, he was speaking about a kind of socialism with a small s, African socialism. It was an African political concept, and it grew with Nyerere in Tanzania and other African leaders. I was a socialist as well, and for KK, who was not a chief or a leader, who was trying to become the leader of his country, he was a Democrat at that time, and he was leading people in the concept of a new society, which of course was the opposite of a colonial society. So that was very important for my understanding. But as a young man teaching leadership at the Zambia Youth Service, I didn't think about African socialism too much.
And what do you remember about October, Independence Day in October 1964?
Well, a hell of a lot of excitement. I still think I can feel that. My task in the youth service when I first arrived wasn't to design a leadership training program, but to work with a core of youth on a demonstration at Independence Day at the Independence Stadium for the ZYS gymnastics display, a calisthenics display, which of course was thrilling. So that day, Doug, I was there. I was right, not in the audience, but out on the tarmac with these 500 lads that two or three of us had trained. And it was pretty exciting. I couldn't believe myself. How did I ever get here?
And KK himself?
Well, he was brilliant. I mean, there he was with his famous cloth over his shoulder and his hair brushed up. And he gave a fine speech that he would do as Independence. He was surrounded by white officials, including the Queen's cousin, I think. I can't quite remember her name. That's significant.
That's very significant.
Yes, yes. Princess. Anyways, and the new cabinet, and there weren't that many African independent countries that could send somebody. I don't even know whether Nyerere was there. But KK was, he was the titular leader. He was loved by so many people, and he had a big job to do.
Well, he did. And part of that, you mentioned in passing, was the mines. And the mines of Zambia produced a lot of copper, still do. And
yes.
there was a long seam of copper that paralleled the panhandle of the Congo or Zaire.
Yes.
Into Zambia. And that copper, as you said, got on the trains and was shipped straight down to the ports out of South Africa.
Yes.
Going through white Rhodesia and white South Africa. KK, as part of his nationalism and humanism, decided to nationalize the copper industry.
Yes.
What do you think was the effect of all that? Did it serve its purpose? Were they able to get more wealth into the country from the mines and the...
Well, that nationalization was maybe 2 or 3 years after independence and after UDI, the Unilateral Declaration of Independence, which was in November of 65. what happened then was that the border was closed by Smith, and that copper didn't go south. And it had to go to the north, to Dar es Salaam, and that was the beginning of the Trans-Zam Railway. The Chinese and others built the railway all the way to Dar es Salaam.
But that didn't come for 4 or 5 years, 6 years.
Yes.
They had to ship gas, petrol, oil products in from Dar on big tanker trucks.
Exactly.
And over a terribly long, dirty road. And then those same trucks would have copper ingots lashed to their flatbed under the tanks and taken back to the ports for export. And
yeah, it affected the copper industry considerably. It didn't stop the mines. They continued to be the biggest income earner for Zambia, but it changed the economics of Zambia completely, and of course Rhodesia went into purgatory, and it struggled, and then there was the war in Zimbabwe and
that's
the people.
Now you're opening the second door that I am very interested in, because there he was leading Zambia, trying to build a new Zambia, trying to build an economy that benefited the people.
Yes.
Change the colonial mentality.
Yes.
And at the same time, on at least three borders, he had Angola under Portugal, he had Rhodesia under the white regime, he had Mozambique under Portugal, and there was a little sliver of land under South Africa, that Caprivi Strip,
yes,
in Namibia, or what was called Southwest Africa back then. Kaunda never forgot the struggle that he undertook against the Federation, which was ruled by those same white Rhodesians.
Yes,
and he stayed true to supporting independence throughout in all those countries that that I just named.
Yes, and that is his legacy. He is remembered. He's only passed a week or so now, but he is well thought of 20 years after he was president, if not even 30. He was 97 last week when he died. So he stuck to his guns. Well, ironically, he didn't pick up a gun. That was very clear. He supported the liberation movements for Zimbabwe, for Namibia, for Mozambique and Angola at great cost, because when the wars started moving to the Zambian borders and over, the Zambian people suffered because of air raids from Smith's jets and the South Africans coming across Namibia and hitting SWAPO, the liberation movement in Western province of Zambia. So he was brave. He knew he couldn't get into a military clash with even Smith, but certainly not South Africa and not Portugal. But he went down a thin line that he was able to support the liberation movements. And it was important globally because he was a spokesperson for decades about liberation in Southern Africa. We in Zambia are not free until South Africa is free. And living there all the years that I did, 12 years or more, that was true. Zambia was never going to be free economically, that's for sure. So it was important that Kaunda led from that point what was called the frontline states. The frontline states were the states around Rhodesia and for a long time, of course, Portugal ruling Mozambique and Angola. And those people, they looked upon KK as a hero. Long after he had lost his popularity, if you will, in Zambia itself.
And that popularity was very much partly because of his support for the movements, because the Zambian suffered a lot.
Yes.
There were shortages of goods in Zambia. The economy had to deal with all that dislocation of the transport routes being cut from the south. And then, of course, militarily, they were right. Their bridges were sabotaged. Even a famous Tazara railway got hit at different points, you know.
Yes. So he was a very popular visitor to the inauguration of Mandela in 94. I was also present in South Africa at that time as a CUSO a field officer and then a volunteer. And Kaunda was cheered very greatly to every time he was outside in the public. And that continued to this day. He went to Mandela's funeral, and he was a bit jocular when he gave his speech. And I think we've seen it on the TV here. He sang his song Tiendi Pamodzi, and nobody knew the chorus.
Nobody knew it. Yeah.
No. Because they were too young, or they never experienced Kenneth Kaunda and his
truly a Zambian phenomena.
Quite.
So there's Kenneth Kaunda. How would you sum him up in a short little brief summary?
Well, a very honest and courageous politician, a humanist. He believed in the Africanness of what was happening. He didn't want to import anybody's structures or ideas on how to rule a country. And he was a father. He lived for so long after he was in power. that he could go anywhere in Zambia and the Zambians would treat him very well, and he would be invited to all the occasions of the neighboring countries, the president's inaugurations, et cetera, et cetera. So to me, a very courageous and wonderful man.
And so many sides of him that that aren't recognized. I too admired him. I could be critical of the misdevelopment steps that were going on in Zambia and my ANC and Zimbabwe and Namibian friends would immediately chastise me, and they say, no matter what the problem is, that man has stood by us constantly and faithfully.
Yes.
And the country hosted millions, I would say, of refugees.
Yes.
In the period of the liberation struggle till 1994.
Yes.
And it paid a dear price. And he tried to lead that in the most sincere way he could. So, Hambakali, and we're sorry to see him go.
Yes.
Thanks, David. That's okay. Great. Now, what I would like to do is just coincidentally, and sadly, another old Africa hand, in this case a Canadian who was present very much on the front line in Zambia, Professor Douglas Anglin, who was a professor at Carleton University from the late 50s, but also knew KK and was very much involved in the first part of that Zambian revolution. Doug Anglin, you knew him as well. Could you tell us a little bit about his background?
I did know Doug Anglin very well. He was the first vice chancellor of the University of Zambia after leaving a post of similar nature in Nigeria. I think it was the University of Ibadan.
Ibadan, yeah.
And he was young. He was one of, well, I was younger than he. There was a core of Canadian academics. Cranford Pratt was another, who was the head of the University of Dar es Salaam. Nyerere brought him over to do that job. So
Jerry Kaplan, quite a lot of young academics.
There were many, many. In the early years of Tanzania and Zambia. So I knew Doug as a CUSO field officer resident in Lusaka a couple of times over 20 years. And Doug was there for many years before he came back to Canada, and he was a political science professor at Carleton University. And an Africanist for sure. Doug was not a political leader in the sense that he was outspoken, but he was often referred to by the Canadian government on Southern African affairs because he'd lived in Africa for so many years. He wasn't a fire-breathing radical.
No. But he was also part of that group that you and I were part of in the early 70s, the Southern African Information Group. He, right. Clyde Sanger and several others, Lawrence Cummings, pulled that together.
Yes.
Peter Bunting.
Yes.
And so he did solidly stand behind, support presentations. I know he and Clyde did a presentation to the House Standing Committee on Foreign Affairs that...
Yes.
That the Tanzanian High Commissioner, and I believe, I don't know if Zambia had a High Commission at that point. They did attend, though. And
yes.
So he stood solidly behind a better foreign policy from Canada.
Quite.
Yes.
And he taught many Canadian students in African studies, which was very important because it was not a biggish subject matter. And many times I would come back from Zambia or South Africa later on, and he would invite me to join a class and just ask me to speak about my experience. So I was close to him. at one point or at a number of a period over a long time, I was simply sending him paper newspaper clippings from the Zambian newspapers. There was no internets and no emails and all that kind of stuff in the early 70s.
So those clippings would have been a researcher's delight.
Absolutely. And I would go down to the post office with a bundle of clips from Times of Zambia and Zambia Mail, which were treasured when they got across the Atlantic.
Absolutely. Well, he was also, I believe, a founding member of the Canadian Association of African Studies.
And uh-huh.
was its president for a while. He was also on the board of directors of International Defense and Aid Fund, IDAFSA, Southern Africa. Cooperation Canada-Mozambique, COCAMO, Canadian Organization for Development Through Education, CODE. And he did election monitoring. From the late 80s on, he was in Namibia, Lesotho, South Africa, Nigeria.
Yes. Gosh.
So he didn't lose his interest. He was, I wouldn't want to call it a backroom guy. That sounds rather nefarious. But he was the kind of guy who was always there supporting progress one way or the other.
Yes, yes. And by example, and in some ways, the Canadian government took advantage of a whole group of us that worked overseas in the trenches as an expression of the Canadian government's aid or interest in Africa, which was only by an arm's length at that time. But Doug would be writing op-ed pages in the Globe and the Star and Montreal Gazette on Southern Africa events. And he was a very close acquaintance, I think, a friend of Kenneth Kaunda, and believed in him and his work. So he was an activist or activista in Portuguese.
Well, thanks for these recollections, David.
Yes.
It's, I think, a very informal and touching way to remember people who've done a lot in their lifetime. And thanks for your help.
I'm very happy to do it. Thank you.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen, for Amandla this week. But before we go, I'd like to also contribute a little bit more than I gave in the discussion with David Beer about Kenneth Kaunda. And first is I communicated with an old Zambian friend. She was a bit shy to come on the show and talk, but she wrote a lovely, lovely tribute to him, you know. How do we handle the KK thing? On June 20th, we had dinner with my kids and talked over all things Zambian. They call it Mosi. Of all the people going on to another world. I will stop here now talking about the Kaunda because there's so many things that could be talked, but make sure you include Tiendi Pamodzi on the radio show. Mm-hmm. She's close to 80 now, and she says, he was a great president, and I was lucky to have been born and grown up in his era. Some of our young and old people in Canada, Ottawa, got to meet KKK when he visited in 2013.
Not KKK.
No, she wrote, KK.
Oh!
When he visited in 2013. There was a lot of dancing at the public reception held at the Zambian High Commissioner's residence, and KK stepped out on the grass patch and danced too. Oh, what a memory. And just coincidentally, she had told me that he was coming and that I was able to bring a copy of my book that I bought in Zambia in probably 1971 or something like that for 75 ngwe. When the kwacha was equal to the dollar, that would have been about 75 cents. And it was called A Humanist in Africa, Kenneth Kaunda. And I took my book to Ottawa and she took it to him and he signed it for me. So I have...
What did he write?
He wrote to Doug. Tiende Pamodzi di Mtima Umo. God bless Kenneth D. Kaunda. And so I'm extremely proud of that edition. Mm. And I just wanted to add one other recollection. The only time I ever got really close, there were two times, but the one time that we were really close, we were on the same plane. We didn't know it. We were leaving Lusaka, April 1979, on our way to Canada with our four kids and all their little backpacks and 100 pieces of katundu luggage. And we got there for the plane early in the morning at the airport, got checked into the departure lounge, and then it was on hold. We were with a whole bunch of ANC comrades that were also flying to Dar es Salaam out of Lusaka. And we were on hold. No reason, just... plane was delayed. We were on hold. And we stayed there till perhaps about 2 or so in the afternoon. And we got four kids. And eventually they checked us into the plane, did a double search going on to the plane to make sure we didn't have anything dangerous. I had a corkscrew. We were suspicious of it. And then we sat down. And at that point, the pilot has the doors closed. And he says to us, ladies and gentlemen, excuse the delay, but this is a very special flight. We have on board the president of Zambia. He's on his way to Maputo for a meeting of the frontline states, the presidents of the frontline states. And our plane is going to fly him there, and then we'll take you to Dar es Salaam.
Wow.
He didn't say, 14 hours late, but that's okay. And that plane took off at a literal 90-degree angle.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I want to remind the reader, listeners rather, of how about 3 weeks ago we did a tribute to Samora Machel with Oli Gierstad and Professor Alan Isaacson.
Plane crash,
And that plane had been lured 7 years later, 79 was when we left, 1986, it was lured by false decoys in the South Africans to the mountains of Lesotho rather than, or Swaziland rather than. The it was a beacon that was meant for Maputo, but it was taking them into the mountains.
Yeah.
And so there was a reason for this 90-degree takeoff, because this is the Rhodesian jets were still flying over Lusaka at that point in the war in 1979. And then what a privilege it was to land in Maputo. Little did we expect to go there, but there we were. That was the second thing. They announced his birthday. It was his birthday. So we all sang happy birthday, and he came and opened up the drapes and he rolled out his famous napkin or handkerchief and greeted us. And that's the kind of man he was, you know? And he gets off the plane in Maputo, down the red carpet to shake hands with Maura Machel. And when all the ceremony is over and the band is gone and the rug is rolled up, the plane turns around and we fly to Dar es Salaam.
Where you were going.
Finally arriving at 11 at night instead of 11 in the morning. And they made up for the delay by giving us free liquor between Maputo and Dar.
Oh, so it was all worth it in the end, Doug.
Oh, it was, because Tanzanian immigration didn't even want to talk to us. They said, get out of here fast.
Okay, well,
so
I have
thank
one,
you, Kenneth.
Yes. Well, I have one recollection. It's not a recollection in the sense that I never met Kenneth Kaunda, but I was in Zambia when he was the president. And so I would have been there in, I think 86 or something. I can't remember the dates exactly, but this was, I was part of a youth tour from Canada, building links with the youth wings of the African National Congress and the Southwest Africa People's Organization, SWAPO. So the two liberation movements for South Africa and Namibia, respectively. And Kenneth Kaunda's Zambia had opened its borders and its doors and its hospitality to housing and hosting the ANC and SWAPO in that time, which was a very unbelievably principled and courageous stand, because when we were there, South Africa was waging its war against the frontline states.
Nasty,
and Zambia.
Nasty.
Was certainly a huge target of South African aggression. I mean, the whole time we were there, if it wasn't the day before, it was the day after we were wherever, there was an airstrike, there was a bomb, there was a something. But there we were.
Bridges sabotaged, roads blown up, pipelines broken.
I mean, way worse in Mozambique, which we went to later. But the point I wanted to make about this is that there we were in the townships of Lusaka, the capital of Zambia, staying with ANC youth in their houses in the townships. And, they were there. It wasn't open. It was somewhat clandestine. But the reality was everybody knew that they were there. And they were afforded a degree of protection, the best that Zambia could give them, but they had a base. And this was a huge, huge contribution to the anti-apartheid struggle, and Zambians paid for it dearly. And
absolutely.
In terms of, the South African attacks and embargo, economic embargo and all the rest of it. But Kenneth Kaunda, stayed the course, Zambians stayed the course, and the rest is history. So that's my Kenneth Kaunda anecdote.
And my final note is that he's actually related to Malawians very directly. His father comes from the same school as the grandfather of Nelly, my wife. He was trained by the Scottish Presbyterian missionaries as a school teacher and missionary, and went from where Nelly's granddad came to Kasungu and stayed in Malawi. His granddad went all the way to the Copper Belt. And that's why he was born there and Zambian. And his wife is also double connected to me and my friend Kapoti Mwakasungura. She's from Karanga. Her father and mother are from Karanga. So when they were looking at their family roots, Kenneth and his wife Betty came to Karanga, and Kapoti led them around to show them their home. So interesting. And Hambakali, Kenneth Kaunda, Hambakali, Doug Anglin. We are finished for this week as Amandla. Stay tuned to Jazz You for him.
C is for
cauliflower,
confusion, creation,
pickle, K is for
kitten,
cam,
seat, wait, fan, roof, seat, U, unbearable,
U is for underground,
oh yeah,
umbrella,
T, trite,
tremendous,
torment,
tire,
C, K,
I can't think of a U one,
T,
F is for famous,
fun, fumble, M is for Montreal.
Hey, je vais te laisser, je dois recevoir mon vaccin Lac des Îles.
Ton vaccin Lac des Îles?
Ben ouais, tu sais comment j'ai hâte d'organiser mon barbecue au chalet avec toute la famille?
Pas bête, ça. Moi, je vais demander mon vaccin restaurant. Ça me manque les soirées improvisées avec les amis.
Hey, moi, j'y vais. Je pense pas qu'il fonctionne contre les retards, ce vaccin-là.
La vaccination nous rapproche de tous ces moments. Suivez la séquence de vaccination prévue dans votre région et prenez rendez-vous à québec.ca/vaccin-COVID. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
The music I bring to you is of a different dimension in my life. I hope you will like this record. Through meditation, dreams, and visions, I have been made a universal man through the power of the Creator who made us all. The music I have played in the past, I know I have played in another place at a different time. And I was sent once again to give the people of